This is Polar Geopolitics, a podcast analysing the global and regional implications of rapid environmental change and rising international interest in the Arctic and Antarctica.
Hi, this is Eric Paglia in Stockholm, Sweden. Time now for episode 56 of the Polar Geopolitics podcast. Quite a bit happening in this part of the world right now. Sweden joining NATO. There's a military operation, a NATO military operation taking place up in the northern parts of Sweden, Norway, and Finland called Steadfast Defender as we speak right now. And for all of these topics, we have kind of the perfect expert to discuss what's happening in the Baltic and Arctic regions, Minna Olander. She's a research fellow at the Finnish Institute of International Affairs in Helsinki. Her research focuses on NATO security in Northern Europe, Nordic defense cooperation, Arctic security, as well as German and Finnish security and defense policy. So Minna, great that you could join us here. Thank you very much for being part of the Polar Geopolitics podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Yeah, and I thought I'd start out by naming something you mentioned in an article in the Foreign Policy Research Institute publication last year. You wrote that it is vital to view the wider Baltic Sea, North Atlantic, Arctic region as a coherent area. And I think that starting with sort of a geographical perspective for this episode, because it really touches on so many things I want to discuss here today. Perhaps you can explain what you mean by this, how you see these spaces as interconnected.
Yeah, thanks for the great question. I'm really happy to delve into this. Basically, this is one of the major impacts that Finland and Sweden's NATO accession has on regional security in the Nordic-Baltic region, as I prefer to call it, instead of sort of like treating these regions as separate ones. So if we think about how it used to look from a NATO perspective before, you had Norway kind of out there at the North Atlantic coast, reaching all the way up to the high north, but like sort of as the lone ally in the European Arctic. Then you had the Baltic states in this geographically pretty difficult position, sandwiched between Russia, the Suwalki Gap, and the Baltic Sea. And there was a lot of concern within NATO whether the Baltic states are actually really defendable, given all these circumstances. And there was this huge gap, of course, between, let's say, northern Norway and then the Baltic states in the Baltic Sea. And the gap was the size of Finland and Sweden, and our countries are quite large, actually, in terms of territory. So this is like the huge change that Finland and Sweden joining NATO has created in terms of how we view this whole region. So now, especially once Sweden becomes a full member, it's a huge game changer in the sense that Sweden really is the connecting link between northern Norway and southern Baltic Sea, because Sweden is a very long country. Sweden really is sort of like this mass in the middle. And that's also why we in Finland are incredibly relieved and happy that Sweden's accession process is now moving forward decisively, because this could have been a big problem, a practical problem for us too. So, if we look at this now, how, especially from the hard security perspective, how the outlook has changed now, it's possible now within the alliance to kind of make coherent and connected defense plans for this whole region without having to figure out how to like circumvent or like work around Finland and Sweden not being in the alliance. Already in the Cold War, there was a lot of secret cooperation between Sweden and NATO countries and NATO itself. NATO was kind of like planning to use Swedish territory in any case, should there be some kind of military contingency in Northern Europe. And even Finland was sort of like always viewed in this context. And now it's just such a huge difference when you can actually just do the planning with everybody on board and you don't need any of these like secret workarounds or anything in order to do that. So geographically, I would say that the geography of deterrence has significantly changed in this region. Like obviously the physical geography doesn't change, but what you make of it is now completely different, or the possibilities that we have.
And what you make of it, that's a good way of phrasing it, because one of the issues being debated quite a bit here in Sweden is the infrastructure in the north. Of course, the Swedish North is also going through quite a large economic transformation, this sort of green transition, as they talk about it from an environmental standpoint. But now, of course, layered upon this is the new security imperatives both because of what's been taking place in Russia and also now with Sweden joining NATO. And as you say, being the sort of mass in the middle, I like the way you put that, connecting the North Atlantic with the Baltic Sea. How can these issues be dealt with in the context of NATO and in Nordic cooperation in terms of physically connecting these regions from an infrastructure standpoint, but also from a planning and political perspective as well?
That is actually one of the biggest challenges that we see in terms of the potential that we have here now. It's not only a problem in Sweden with the lack of infrastructure or maybe poor quality or just generally the fact that there aren't much railroads up there and connectivity is sort of an issue. Also, of course, given the climatic challenges to maintaining any kind of infrastructure, be it railroads or even just like normal car roads, with these like cold temperatures in the winter and temperature like swings, it's quite hard to maintain infrastructure in a good condition. But of course, that is also a big challenge in Finland. The kind of northern part of Finland, Sweden, Norway that you also mentioned, where the Nordic response exercise is now taking place as part of this bigger Steadfast Defender exercise. It's precisely testing all of this, like how well can militaries move up there? Like what kind of mobility is there in place? And military mobility, as it's called, it will be one of the major issues for our countries, especially in the northern part, that becomes now a much more relevant area of also military action, unfortunately. So this is quite an issue, and this will need a significant amount of investments by all three countries, Finland, Sweden, and Norway, to make sure that in a conflict, there would be actually the necessary infrastructure in place so that reinforcements could move from... The idea is that they would arrive or like land at the Norwegian Atlantic coast and then move through Sweden to Finland, where we would suppose that the fight would be. So this is extremely important in terms of making the best of this. The air forces, for example, of Finland, Sweden, Norway have been cooperating very intensively and extensively in the Cap of North region for a very long time now, because obviously that is a little bit easier, not so bound to ground infrastructure. But the land force cooperation is still kind of like that is being really built up now, and that will require quite some political willingness to invest into the infrastructure. Then there are also questions, of course, of environmental nature, with some maybe protected natural areas, also with the Sami people, the indigenous people who live there and their traditional livelihoods and so on. So I think that the northern parts of our countries will require quite some attention in the coming years to make sure that all of this can be done in a way that is also not creating new problems.
In Norway, Sweden, and Finland have had quite close cooperation for many years now, of course. Now the game changer, if you want to put it that way, is Finland and Sweden joining NATO. Well, that significantly changed things. I mean, there was also this between the United States and Finland and Norway and Sweden.
The Defense Cooperation Agreement.
The Defense Cooperation Agreements, that's right. Defense Cooperation Agreements, DCAs. Well, how is this changing the situation? The NATO ascension of Sweden and Finland and these bilateral agreements with the United States?
Well, all of this is supposed to be sort of like parts of a bigger picture, of course. It's quite a significant step for especially Finland to have actually formalized the defense cooperation in such a contractual degree with the United States. This was quite unthinkable in Finland for a long time, and it sort of like symbolizes how big the change has been in Finland, not only since 2022, but also already before that. Finland and Sweden both took steps to increase and kind of make it closer, the cooperation with the United States, already before there were like bilateral and trilateral agreements already in, or kind of like statements of intent already in 2016 and 18. So there was a story, pre-story to these DCAs that were signed last year. But the idea, of course, is that the United States views this region as one region. It's not gonna kind of do the same things with each country, but it's gonna view the bigger picture and then think about like what makes sense to be deposited in Finland, which is like supposedly closer to the front line. What should be maybe deposited in Sweden, and like what kind of arrangement makes sense? And here actually in the negotiation process of these DCAs, and by the way, Denmark is still in the process of negotiating theirs. There has been a lot of coordination between Finland, Sweden, and Norway. Norway was quite forthcoming with sharing like their experiences from the negotiations, and there was a lot of like kind of sharing of information on who is striving for what, so that also the Nordic countries had quite a good view of like what was going on, what was happening. And that was very important because, of course, the point shouldn't be that we all try to get the maximum US presence into our countries, but it has to make sense for the wider region and from NATO perspective and for all of us. Of course, unfortunately, right now, especially since it's election year in the US, one also has to remember that these agreements are basically legal documents that regulate different legal aspects of US military presence in our countries, meaning both troop and equipment deployment to Finland or Sweden. And it's basically, it enables the United States to do things in our countries, but it doesn't necessarily require anything. It doesn't it's not a commitment in a way. It's an important step to increasing the cooperation and potentially increasing also the US presence, but it still requires political will in the US to do that. So there's unfortunately some question marks at the moment, what exactly will materialize and what will the nature of the commitment be, especially in the situation that Trump gets reelected as president.
Of course, the NATO agreements, of course, are legally binding and commit
yes.
All members to come to the defense of others. I guess these defense cooperation agreements could somehow be a complement to these more formal legal binding.
Yeah, exactly. So they basically regulate according to which country's law different things can be done. And if US soldiers commit crime in our countries, like who is to judge them and so on. So it's very legal in nature. And even with the NATO Article 5 commitment, it is a very strong commitment and it is a very strong security guarantee. And that is also obviously the reason why Finland and Sweden went for it when Russia once again chose the path of violence. But there is also still a lot of room for maneuver in what exactly would happen if Article 5 was triggered. So there are still, unfortunately, ways for Trump, if he so chose, to kind of contractually honor the commitment, but in military terms, not to do much. So we have to be aware that there is a political risk to the cooperation with the United States, unfortunately, and that is because the domestic politics has become so intrinsically linked to U.S. foreign policy as well and its global commitment. So, we will have to follow very closely what happens in the U.S. and then also have a plan B, unfortunately.
Well, I guess Finland and Sweden are probably above 2% of GDP in terms of military spending. So in that sense, maybe they're exempt from Trump's his little gambit there that he did a couple of
weeks. We can hope so, but I'm unfortunately also in that regard, I'm a bit pessimistic because I think that that's one of many possible excuses that he could come up with for not defending Europe. I mean, imagine a situation where all of us all of a sudden started spending like 3 or 4% in defense. And maybe he would then say, well, look, guys, they don't need us anymore. So, I mean, there are so many possibilities how he could kind of justify not coming to Europe's defense that I don't think that we should create any false sense of security either simply by fulfilling the 2%. So there's more to be done than that. Yeah.
It's a very good point. There is quite a large American presence right now in Finland and Sweden because of its Steadfast Defender 2024 military exercise, the biggest in NATO exercise in many years. And as you mentioned also, this idea of the Cap of the North, the North Quad, as we call it here, the northern, the Arctic parts of Norway, Finland, and Sweden are right now going through this quite large exercise. How important are such exercises, this one in particular, and the sort of the associated Nordic response that you also mentioned? And what signals do they send to Russia, and how does Russia interpret and act upon such maneuvers?
I would say that like these kind of exercises, and this is, by the way, the largest since the Cold War, so it's quite significant. I think it has two purposes. First of all, now that NATO has sort of returned back to its roots, so it's really focused now on territorial defense in Europe because that's where the threat is right now with Russia's war in Ukraine ongoing, and the future still very uncertain what the outcome of that war will be. And so NATO is preparing for any eventualities in that regard. And that shows that this has, on the one hand, a very practical purpose, also to sort of like integrate the new members, Finland and Sweden, into the wider defense planning in the alliance. And this is very important in terms of the... So there will be three new regional plans in NATO, a little bit like in the Cold War, but a bit different. And... one of them is the Euro-Atlantic and Arctic, like European Arctic and Atlantic area. So the northernmost regional plan, and all of this, like what is happening now in this exercise, the Nordic response and the Steadfast Defender. So in the Nordic response, they're testing like what is the readiness and what is the ability to work in work together in Arctic conditions. Winter warfare is a very specific skill that our countries have, but not everybody knows how to do. So it's very important also to have a lot of allies participating in these exercises so that they get a very like firsthand experience of what the conditions are when it's sort of cold, but also springtime is coming. So then the snow is also melting in some parts already. When there is little infrastructure and little civilization as well, and maybe even like, I mean, very, very up north, like also trees don't grow anymore. So these are like all very specific kind of circumstances, natural and topographical circumstances that don't exist elsewhere. So that's one part. And also one part of this wider Steadfast Defender exercise that will continue until May. So several months long exercise. So one part is also in Central Europe to test the movement of allied troops and equipment through Europe to the eastern flank. So these are, of course, very concrete reasons to do this exercise. But then there's also the wider sort of signaling purpose towards the adversary, which is not defined in the communication about this exercise officially. But it is called a near peer conflict that is exercised here, which basically means Russia. And the idea, of course, is also beyond Russia. Like if we think about others like China or even as far as Iran or something, just generally this group of rogues, as we could call them. So the idea is to signal firm sort of resolute unity in the alliance, to show that it's not just empty words when in 2022 in the Madrid summit NATO announced that it will defend every inch of allied territory at all times. So it really includes also these vast northern areas, the new territory that was added to the alliance since then. So there is this signaling purpose of showing especially Russia that we are ready and we are determined, and that it would be an extremely bad idea to test NATO's resolution to defend its allies, because that is, of course, something that is really probably keeping some decision makers up at night, that whether Russia may at some point decide to do some kind of provocation somewhere else, like on NATO territory, to just test whether NATO really walks the talk. So this is one very important purpose of the exercise, to show Russia very clearly where the limits are, so that there would be no misunderstandings on the Russian side either. Because like a big part of like why Russia went to war against Ukraine was a huge miscalculation about how that would go and what would be the Ukrainian resolution to fight back. So I think this is especially relevant for the Arctic, which hasn't really been on NATO's agenda until now, that we very clearly signal our own limits there and our own red lines, so that there's not like too much ambiguity where Russia could, like, based on a misunderstanding, it could come to some kind of unintended escalation or something like that. I personally think that it's not very likely, but it's also better to be safe than sorry. And that's why it's very important to signal this kind of clear response that we would have if Russia tried something.
And Russia, of course, also practices these gray zone tactics, this hybrid warfare. Mm. Finland has been at the front lines of. I'd like to talk about a bit more about that a little later on. But before that, you voiced some concern in another article I read that you wrote over the Nordic countries somehow being divided across two different NATO joint force commands. I wonder what the current, this was about a year ago you wrote this, but is that still the case? And then with Sweden joining NATO and Finland already joining NATO, how does the command structure of the Arctic and Baltic regions look inside of NATO at this point?
This is indeed a little bit tricky issue, because like on the one hand, we have this newly united region, which used to be extremely fragmented. If we think about like who belonged to what, like there were not very overlapping EU and NATO memberships in this region. And now we have this one common denominator, and that is NATO. And then it's a question like how to pragmatically and practically organize it. So the Baltic states belong to the Joint Force Command Brunsum, which is responsible for the Central European sort of like land warfare. And that also makes sense for the Baltic states, because Germany is, for example, committing quite significantly, or attempting to do so at least, to the Baltic's defense and so on. But then the question for especially Finland and Sweden was back in the summer, and it still is, that the regional defense plans were kind of, the plans were made before Finland and Sweden decided to join. I mean, that came as a big positive surprise to many people. And also the process went very, very fast. So some of these are legacy issues, in the sense that, as I described in the very beginning, it used to be this kind of situation where there was Norway out here, and it made sense to have Norway in the Atlantic plans, the Euro-Atlantic plans, and in the Arctic plans. And then the Baltic states were kind of like quite far away and further in the south, and also further to the east, like at the eastern flank. But now we have this new connection between the eastern flank and the northern flank. First of all, there is a new northern flank now, and Finland is sort of like part of the northeastern flank, and really like kind of connecting these two. So it's sort of a different situation now. And the Nordics have expressed the wish to be all united under the Joint Force Command Norfolk, which is located in the United States. And that is the command that is going to be responsible for the northern defense plan as well, so the Euro-Atlantic one, or like Arctic Euro-Atlantic. And this makes sense from the Nordic countries' perspective, given their very long-standing regional cooperation with each other. And my point also when I wrote that article was that there was sort of like, given what was publicly known about these JFC plans plus the regional plans, it looked like either Finland and Sweden would have to go into different plans and commands, or you would have to somehow draw the line somewhere in the middle of Finland and Sweden, or like, so that you would have the northern parts in one plan and the southern parts in another. And it seemed that there was this obvious flaw in the logic that had not considered like Finland and Sweden in the alliance when these plans were originally drafted. But this is obviously like work in progress, and now it looks like the wish by the Nordic countries to be all under Norfolk has been received and understood, and work is ongoing to kind of scale up the capacity of the command in Norfolk, which has so far been like purely air and sea focused, to build up the ability there to also command such a quite vast landmass as the North Kalot and the Finnish and Swedish territories bring to the alliance. So as soon as this work is done, that the Nordics will join this command all together. But right now, Finland is still under Brunsum. That was the interim solution. And we will see what happens with Sweden, whether Sweden already goes directly to Norfolk. But I would expect that Sweden also first is just like put under command of Brunsum until the work has been done in Norfolk. But this has been kind of like, and this sort of shows how big the transformation is also for NATO. So this is really the most significant enlargement and the biggest transformation for NATO since the Eastern Enlargement in the early 2000s, because NATO's doctrine also went from this like crisis management focus, like out of area operations somewhere in Iraq, Afghanistan, and like elsewhere far away, to actual territorial defense in Europe. So this requires quite significant changes. And that is why Finland and Sweden's accession is also so monumental, also from the alliance's perspective.
And NATO expansion is rightfully getting most of the attention these days in terms of military cooperation in Northern Europe and particularly in the Nordic countries. Mm. But there's also other ongoing types of defense cooperation between Norway, Finland, and Sweden. We mentioned the bilateral agreements each of those countries has with the United States, the defense cooperation agreements. There's also an older cooperation that goes back, I think, to about 2009, this DEFCO, the Nordic Defense Cooperation. Perhaps you can tell us a bit about that and how that works in the context of the Arctic and Baltic security system.
The NORDEFCO is a very interesting format, and actually the cooperation goes back even way further. So right after the World Wars, there was this attempt to create some kind of a Nordic or Scandinavian defense alliance or union. That did not work out back then because Sweden wanted it to be neutral, whereas Norway and Denmark did not want to stay neutral, and so they joined NATO instead. But the cooperation actually did take place between the Nordic countries, despite this kind of difficult situation with Finland having this friendship treaty with the Soviet Union and Norway being a NATO member and Sweden in the middle trying to be as neutral as possible. But actually the cooperation in secret did take place already in the Cold War. And then NORDEFCO was established in 2009 more as a response to the global financial crisis and the kind of like need to, or this idea that through joint procurement you can create economies of scale and like kind of reduce the cost of defense spending, because like all countries worldwide were very much under like fiscal pressure and like budgets were going down everywhere for defense. So this was the original idea. Ironically, joint procurement has been maybe the least successful area of NORDEFCO so far, often because of like differing industrial interests. The Swedish industry has been quite a strong factor there, and others kind of like not always wanting to play along with it. But since 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea and sort of like did the first like more limited invasion of Ukraine, that really changed the perspective for NORDEFCO, and that's where the cooperation started becoming much more operational. And now the focus is almost entirely operational in this new situation. And the interesting thing is that Norway and Denmark used to be sort of more reluctant to go all in on NORDEFCO, and they wanted to kind of like hold back, and they always emphasized that NATO is their primary defense arrangement, and they don't want to create any kind of double structures. But after Finland and Sweden decided that they want to join the alliance, Norway and Denmark have actually been really forward-leaning in bringing forward this cooperation. They have been very helpful within NATO, pushing for the ratification of Finland and Sweden. Jens Stoltenberg himself, the NATO Secretary General, has been very forthcoming in the whole process. And Finland and Sweden have received a lot of support from the other Nordic countries here. So now there is like this whole new sort of level unlocked in a way in the possibilities for cooperation, since we now are all part of the same alliance. And that means that there are no more limitations on like intelligence sharing and other sensitive areas that have been sort of like off the table on the part of Norway and Denmark. So basically, this has an incredible momentum right now. We have seen first steps already. For example, a year ago, the Nordic Air Forces announced this new letter of intent to start integrating their fleets even more closely, so that they would reach this real kind of like ability to flexibly work together in different like configurations of the forces according to need. So it doesn't mean quite that they would form like one big Nordic fleet, but then essentially the idea would be that they could very flexibly form different kind of configurations and then work together on a very short notice. So kind of like take the Nordic already existing Nordic cooperation with the air forces onto the next level. And it was very positive that also Denmark joined this. So Denmark is also more on board. So just to give an example how the situation used to be, it was very kind of like counterintuitive and confused situation with Finland and Sweden in the EU, Iceland, Norway, and Denmark in NATO, but then Denmark also in the EU, but with an opt-out in EU's defense cooperation, Norway not in EU, but with an opt-in on the cooperation. So Norway is actually doing a lot of like EU projects, whereas Denmark was out of them. And all of this was quite a mess. And it was also a significant decision by Denmark to opt out of their opt-out. So they in a referendum, actually abolished this opt-out on the defense cooperation in the EU. So now there's a lot more potential for things to be done among the Nordic countries, and which is great, because this is a very useful framework group for Finland and Sweden as new members as well, with founding members like Norway as support. So you can, in a very different way, kind of understand the dynamics within the alliance and also kind of promote your own interests as a group.
I mean, of course, now the expansion of NATO to completely cover the Nordic countries is a very new thing. What role, what expectations do you think the rest of NATO will have on the Nordic countries in this regional context in terms of providing security for the Baltic and also for the Arctic? Will this expand beyond or extend beyond the territorial boundaries of the Nordic countries to go further into the North Atlantic, the Barents Sea, perhaps other areas, and fulfill certain functions within the alliance?
There's definitely a big expectation on Finland and Sweden making it easier to defend the Baltic states, obviously. And I think that it's understandable that NATO's focus still very much is on the Baltics, because it has been this big kind of question for the past 10 years since the annexation of Crimea. Like, are we actually able to defend them? And if yes, how are we going to do it? And especially since this tripwire approach, which would mean that actually Russia would probably run over then, but then NATO would have to sort of like, you know, retake or take back the territory. Like, that's not an option anymore after we have seen what Russia has done in Ukraine, in the areas it has managed to take, like Irpin, Bucha, and so on. So this is not an option anymore. So there are a lot of expectations on Finland and Sweden, of course, to provide support for that and to provide contribute also to that. Although for Finland with the Baltic states, it's a little bit different, because Finland is also like frontline state. So what Finland's role is to kind of create an additional dilemma for Russia, so that it can't even so easily plan an attack on the Baltics without considering the whole long border with Finland that reaches all the way up to very close to the Kola Peninsula, where Russia has its nuclear submarine fleet. And that is very important, strategically very important military district and base for Russia, because those nuclear submarines basically provide Russia with the second strike, nuclear second strike capability. So this is a very new and much more complicated scenario for Russia. And that in itself is already a valuable contribution to the alliance, that Finland creates this whole new kind of dilemma from the Russian perspective if they look at the NATO-Russia border. It's sort of like, it may sound a bit counterintuitive, but actually for NATO, it's a huge advantage to have this longer border because Finland and Sweden are actually very capable allies and they don't add a burden, but they are security contributors. Whereas for Russia, it makes the planning of any offensive campaigns against NATO much more complicated because now it has a longer border to consider. Also not to forget that, like, whatever happens in Ukraine will remain a big dilemma for Russia because there's like one of Europe's most combat experienced armed forces now facing it along a also like basically 1,000 kilometers long border. So the situation is inherently much more complicated for Russia now than it used to be before this invasion, and Russia has in many ways achieved the opposites of its original strategic goals here. What comes to the Arctic, it's a little bit less clear because Arctic has really been sort of Norwegian-Canadian domain where they have been also sort of reluctant to let NATO in. Norway had its own sort of approach how to manage the situation with Russia, and it had like this two-track approach which was called like reassurance and deterrence. So it included like good bilateral relations and then what the Norwegians like to call calibrated deterrence, which means that like the deterrence was provided by the NATO membership, but Norway would sort of like self-restrain from like NATO activity or NATO presence too far up north, too close to the Russian border. And the interesting thing with especially Finland's accession to NATO is that, of course, now it's not anymore only up to Norway, like what to do with regard to Russia in the Arctic. So if Finland now starts building NATO bases in the northern part of the country or like having massive exercises there all the time, which is basically happening, then it's sort of like kind of, you know, pulls the carpet under Norway's like calibrated deterrence to an extent. And this can be actually also a good thing because then it's not only Norway's responsibility to kind of manage that relationship. So it can be like positive or negative, depending a little bit whom you ask in Norway, how this situation is viewed, but it definitely changes. And I think the Arctic is a little bit less clear in the sense that, as I mentioned earlier, it hasn't been on NATO's agenda, and that has been also because the Arctic allies have not wanted it so. So it's a new area, and there will be more kind of like internal politics about it within NATO with differing perspectives on how to do escalation management, given that Russia has such significant strategic interests in the region with its Northern Fleet base. So I think that it will be very important to be also like not only in terms of like military terms, but to have a very good kind of like diplomatic and political strategy to accompany it also within the alliance, because actually the inner NATO politics and diplomacy is a very intricate and kind of like complicated issue, as Sweden and Finland got to see with Turkey's objections, for example, to their NATO accession. So this is a little bit more complicated. And I think many allies will also have an interest in us sort of like taking care of the region so that maybe, and the US has, by the way, also sort of made this clear in the national security strategy and also in their Arctic strategy that they expect the European Arctic allies to be mainly responsible for that part of the world. Because there might be some questions of like, escalation management as well, like what kind of presence do you want there? Like you want enough NATO presence, but then it has to be communicated clearly towards Russia. And that was something that I mentioned with regard to this exercise that is ongoing. So there is this like virtue in sort of thinking about escalation potential, but not letting, like not starting to self-deter by supposing some red lines where there may be none. And we have to always remember that we have interests in the Arctic as well. And we have to be able to safeguard those, like our own interests. And we can't always just think about Russia's interests when we think about our like military presence in the region.
You talked a bit about the Baltic states and Finland as well being frontline states to Russia. And here in Sweden, I mean, it's always felt like there's been some distance to Russia, but the last few months or so has really been more and more public statements by senior military officials, political figures, and others that have really made this the Russian threat of a Russian military action in Sweden even, feel much less abstract, much more like a clear and present danger. As a security expert of this region, I mean, how true do you think that is? Is there a real acute threat at the moment that Russia could turn its military attentions towards Finland, Sweden in the next few months or years?
I think it really depends on the sort of time horizon that we're talking about. And I fully understand the reason why in Sweden it may be necessary to make this kind of pretty tough statements on the political level to sort of make it really sink in the population. There's this wonderful term in Swedish, which is called fredskadad, so like peace damaged, that this very, very long, like 200 years of non-participation in wars has sort of made Swedes very comfortable. And of course, like in the Cold War, the situation was very different, and Sweden had a very high military readiness and also this total defense system, but it was entirely dismantled after the Cold War. And that is a big difference between Finland and Sweden, for example, that Finland kept it in place, whereas Sweden went all in on the peace dividend and this idea that history sort of ended when the Cold War ended. So I understand that there's maybe a different need in Sweden to communicate that in also sort of like pretty harsh terms to the population, to make people understand that higher defense spending is not really optional. It's just something that has to be done. And also to make the population understand that they have to like increase their individual preparedness levels as well, so as to make the whole society more resilient. Sweden has twice the population as Finland and Norway, but Swedish territory is even larger than our country. So Sweden has the same dilemma as the other Nordic countries, that you have a like vast territory and a small population. And that's kind of a challenge in terms of how to then defend that territory. And Sweden for sure lost the ability to, on its own, defend all of its territory after the Cold War. And I think that it's actually not only now or like after the full-scale invasion of Russia and Ukraine, but it sort of started 10 years ago in Sweden with the Russian Easter incident, when in 2013, Russia simulated a nuclear attack on Sweden during an exercise. So this has actually been ongoing for a much longer time. And there was this whole period with all the time, like gradually increasing tensions with Russia in also the Baltic Sea region that preceded this full-scale attack on Ukraine. So I think that what we are more likely to see in the near future are these different kinds of hybrid things happening here and there. We have seen gas pipelines damaged between in the Baltic Sea, several by now, both the Nord Stream and the Baltic Connector, with potentially even some Chinese participation in that one. We have seen a lot of like this kind of fishing boat activity up in the north along the Norwegian coastline, damaging also internet cables, for example, to Svalbard, or other critical undersea infrastructure. So this is something that we need to absolutely get better at, protecting. And we need to increase our ability to respond to this kind of action. But there's also different things that can happen. We have, of course, the border situation right now with targeted migration along the Finnish border. That already happened once in 2015 and 16 at both the Norwegian and the Finnish border, which was sort of like a test case for later occasions, like also what happened, what we saw then 2020 and 2021 at the Polish, Belarusian and Lithuanian Belarusian borders. So Russia has been also sort of giving us a lot of hints what it has in its toolbox, sort of, and what we can expect. GPS jamming is a very common occurrence in the Gulf of Finland. It has been a huge issue also for civilian air traffic, that Russia very regularly does that. So I think that probably it will take some years for Russia to build up the necessary military capability to actually militarily pose a threat to our countries, because as I mentioned, there is this whole new situation for Russia with the Finnish border. And right now, the border is still mainly relatively empty of troops and equipment because all of that has been drawn to Ukraine. So the one part that is still pretty much intact from this war is the Northern Fleet. So the air and land, air and sea assets there are widely intact. And that is why I would expect the Arctic to become more important also from the Russian perspective, because that's where they have most of their intact assets. But otherwise, I would expect that we would see first some sort of a military buildup before Russia would be in a position to try anything, like try attacking our countries actually militarily, even if it was a limited kind of operation. And that, of course, depends entirely how the war in Ukraine goes and what kind of support Russia can receive from China and Iran and North Korea, as it now seems that they are working together, unfortunately, quite well.
And that relationship is very interesting, particularly China, which has been quite active in the Arctic. Much of the discussion about Arctic geopolitics is about China's interests. But in terms of Finland, I mean, Finland has had a quite a warm relationship with China for most of the past 20 years or so, shipbuilding and other sorts of trade and such. But you mentioned this incident where this Baltic connector cable was ruptured apparently by a Chinese freighter of some sort, with the anchor, in Russia, of course, having a close relationship with China. And now with Finland joining NATO, how does that affect Finland's relationship with China? And how do you see the China-Russia axis developing in the Baltic and Arctic context in the years ahead?
I think that there has been quite a shift in Finland, and that has been coming already for some years. So it was very interesting what kind of ambitions China had for Northern Finland. So as part of this Polar Silk Road, China had quite a lot of interest and big plans for infrastructure development in Northern Finland. For example, they wanted to build the railway from where it ends now currently, like a little bit above the Arctic Circle, to reach all the way up to the Arctic Ocean. And then they also wanted to invest into building this tunnel between Finland and Estonia, so that then once when also the Baltic railway connections would be built, there's currently like hardly any railways in the connecting the Baltic states. But so there was this idea with the Polar Silk Road that there would be like sort of a railway connection from the Arctic Ocean through Finland, then through Tallinn, and then to continental Europe. So that was a big plan that China had for Finland. And initially, like let's say 10 years ago, there was some enthusiasm about this in Finland. And for example, the railway connection up to the Arctic Ocean has been frequently discussed. But due to environmental concerns and also because there's hardly like enough civilian traffic to make it sort of pay off, there has been also a lot of opposition to that idea in especially Northern Finland. And there was sort of like a shift in 2018-19 that the mood started to change with regard to China, because we saw a huge influx of Chinese tourists to Finland and especially Northern Finland before the pandemic. And then Chinese companies also started like, you know, building hotels for Chinese tourists. So there were these kind of, you know, infrastructure projects as well, like Chinese investments into hotels. There was a growing interest on the Chinese side in scientific cooperation, especially in satellite data. And at some point, the dots connected and the Finns got kind of suspicious, like, what's up with this? Like, what are they trying to get at? Like, what do they want here? And what is the bigger purpose of all this, if you look at the big picture? And then the mood became more restrictive towards Russian Chinese investment. And actually, it used to be sort of a blind spot in Finland also with regard to Russia, that we had quite sort of, it was easy to access property in Finland. So Russian buyers bought a lot of property in Finland in the past 10 to 20 years. Also very suspiciously close to military installations and so on. And that was sort of, there was also this very big high profile case where Russians had started building sort of like an amphibious landing capacity on an island in Finland that they had bought, and it was like taken up by the Finnish authorities. But now times have changed a lot. Finland has kind of made the regulations on third country nationals buying property much tighter. So now if any third country nationals, so outside of the EU, want to buy property in Finland, it needs to be approved by the Ministry of Defense. And there have been several cases since the laws were changed where the Ministry of Defense has decided not to give the permit, both to Russian but also some Chinese buyers. So this has changed a lot, and there is now much more of an awareness that China can also have not our best interests at heart. And I think it's also visible in the 5G network debate. I think Sweden is an interesting case where it was completely ruled out that Huawei could participate. In Finland, I think it wasn't like exactly spelled out that Huawei is banned from kind of participating, but it has been made sure that there is no Chinese kind of investment in any critical networks. So there has been a very clear shift in thinking here. It was also one of the few things where there were like some differences between our presidential candidates in ahead of the election just a month ago, where one of the candidates was a little bit more positive towards not putting China and Russia into the same basket, but kind of differentiating between them and their interests and also strategic ways of doing things, whereas then the other candidate in the last round was more hawkish towards it. And I think that there is quite a good understanding in Finland at this point that we should avoid making the same mistakes with China that we made with Russia.
Was it the hawk that won? Was it Stubb that was more hawkish on China?
No, actually, Stubb was less hawkish than Haavisto. In the beginning, he was sort of suggesting that Finland should still kind of keep sort of doing business with China, but like not be naive about it, but still sort of not to kind of like put China or equate China with Russia, and that there is still a difference between those two. But he did harden his line in the course of the election campaign, so that was also quite interesting.
In one of the articles I read that you wrote, I don't know if you used the term Arctic exceptionalism in it, but basically you were signaling that it was a myth all along. There was never any sort of Arctic exceptionalism where the Arctic was immune to these other geopolitical tensions elsewhere. But you also made some very interesting points about how Russia has sort of played upon this notion that the Arctic could be a place of peaceful cooperation without ever really believing in it themselves and using it as a way to sort of gain certain advantages against other countries. Perhaps you could explain that perspective.
Yeah, so there's like this slogan, high north, low tension. I think it might originate from Norway, actually, but Russia has definitely sort of like really endorsed it, and this idea, which was maybe true to an extent at some point in the past, where there was this idea that the Arctic should remain a piece of a zone of peace, and like, you know, somehow we should try to keep it untouched by conflicts elsewhere, which was maybe always sort of like naive and unrealistic. But especially since the Nordic countries' interest in the Arctic have been mainly maybe of environmental nature and commercial, but certainly not military type of interest. Russia has been quite good at sort of using these kind of cooperation formats, like the Barents Cooperation or the Arctic Council and other sort of like soft policy formats to promote this idea of the Arctic as this kind of sphere where the Western countries absolutely should stay out of in military terms. And it has been, so Russia has been very good at using the soft cooperation as sort of a smokescreen, or like kind of hiding behind it. It has itself actually built up its own military capacity in the Arctic very significantly in the past 15 years. So this is not something that has happened in any way related to the war in Ukraine, for example, but it has been a longer term process ongoing for more than a decade. And at this point, Russia has rebuilt a lot of its Soviet era military bases in the Arctic. And there we indeed see a situation where NATO is like quite far behind the Russian military capability in the Arctic, because it simply hasn't been our on our agenda at all. And what Russia has been doing quite a lot is to use these environmental concerns of especially the Nordic countries to kind of create some sort of environmental problem, or at least like have some environmental problems, and then expect the Nordic countries to jump in and solve it for Russia. And then also praise Russia for stopping being the problem. So there has been, for example, an issue with nuclear waste dumping into the Arctic Ocean along Russia's Arctic coastline, where it also has its testing sites. There was a case discovered by the Barents Observer of a Russian vessel that Sweden and Norway invested like significant amounts of money to help Russia equip that vessel with the necessary equipment to deal with the nuclear waste. But Russia ended up using this same vessel actually in its nuclear testing program instead of like dealing with the waste. So this is a very typical thing that would happen, and where Russia is very good at using our very real environmental and climate related concerns. And also, Russia has been really good at using its sheer size and how important that makes Russia for any kind of relevant climate action. I mean, half of or more than half of the Arctic territory is in Russia. So it has an absolutely like incredibly long Arctic coastline. So then you could say that there's only half a point to Arctic cooperation, especially in climate, if Russia is not on board, because then the impact of your actions will be so limited if Russia is just like at the same time doing nothing. So and also for weather data, this has been a big issue since that cooperation has been sort of like halted. So Russia has been very good at using its position here to kind of be able then to also set the agenda and sort of like create this acceptance for many things that it has been doing that are actually going totally against this proclaimed narrative of the Arctic as a demilitarized zone of peace. And it has kind of been able to trust that it's too important, so the Nordic countries will have to just keep cooperating with it and have to tolerate whatever it's doing. So I think that there has been this very problematic pattern, and we have to be careful in the future that if we resume some sort of cooperation with Russia in the Arctic, that we're not naive about it and that we don't fall for this again. So we have to expect, unfortunately, that Russia will not be engaged in cooperation in good faith. It is very likely that it will use it to some of its own advantage, that might be our disadvantage. So we have to be very careful about how far to go and at what point in time to maybe then start reaching out again or like accept some Russian outreach. And we also have to be very careful not to accept this kind of, to use more the stick and less the carrot. So Russia has been good at like creating problems and then expecting to be praised for stopping being the problem. So there was also this like these suggestions that Russia should be somehow like incentivized to stop the war in Ukraine. But I think this would be exactly the same pattern that has got us to this point where we are now, and we have to kind of stop falling back into that pattern.
So there's been something of a learning curve among the Nordic countries when it comes to relations with Russia and with China as well.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't like blame anyone for having tried it the good way. It's just that, like, unfortunately, I don't think that especially the Putin regime really cares at all about environmental issues. So this has just not been like genuine good faith cooperation. It has been that Russia has seen a way of like using us to an extent to for own gain in other fields. And that's unfortunate. And we have to be more aware of that.
We've been talking for a long time, Anna. It's been a fantastic, really fascinating conversation. And if you could just let me have one more question, perhaps.
Sure.
Slightly not off topic, but maybe a little different about Germany. We haven't talked about Germany directly. And I know Germany is one of your areas of expertise. So then it's something we haven't talked that much about in this podcast in general. So I thought I'd take this opportunity to ask you about Germany's interests and outlooks on the Arctic. We know, of course, that they have great interest in the Baltic region with the pipelines and all kinds of other interests. But specifically the Arctic, I mean, do you have any idea of how Germany looks upon the Arctic as an economic set of opportunities, environmental concerns, or perhaps even security concerns?
I think in the German view of the Arctic, there's actually quite a good connection between the climate security and military security. So Germany has no intentions or ambitions, and also not really the capacity at the moment to try and become more active or be more present militarily in the Arctic. So that is not to be expected. It would maybe like be in a supporting role if the Nordic countries requested it. But apart from that, there is no plans for a greater role for Germany in terms of hard security in the Arctic, as it's already like very focused on the Baltic states and the brigade that it means to deploy or intends to deploy to Lithuania at some point in the hopefully near future. And but Germany does have an interest in sort of like environmental concerns in the Arctic, and also sort of like what kind of relevant maybe research and development is happening there, scientific cooperation on Arctic issues, this kind of stuff. Germany is fairly active, actually. But I think that a lot of things are also happening within the EU framework, and Germany sort of like relatively respectful of this approach that the Nordic countries have themselves had to kind of like keep everybody else at like an arm's length and sort of keep it as our own backyard and not have too many people messing about the Arctic, sort of. But I think that Germany can have a fairly constructive role there, especially since they don't intend to like have any great military presence there. So there's more opportunity to make maybe some commercial and economic cooperation. But one concern that both France and Germany actually share in the Arctic is the freedom of navigation. And that is related to the Northern Sea Route, which is becoming, unfortunately, thanks to the climate change, more and more year-round navigable. And Russia has already asserted quite some claims onto the Northern Sea Route, so that it's making it hard for other nations' ships to navigate through the Northern Sea Route. This is also becoming more important for Russia as a direct connecting line to Asian markets, now that it has sort of like lost the Western markets due to sanctions for its energy exports. So there is some French and German interest in making sure that Russia is not able to completely, you know, undermine the multilateral rules-based world order by sort of like claiming the whole Northern Sea Route completely for itself. So I think that this freedom of navigation question and shipping through that route could become quite a hot topic in the future, where many countries have different interests.
Sounds like the topic of a future episode of Polar Geopolitics.
I'm afraid, yeah.
And I hope, I mean, we can have you back on at some point to share.
That would be great. Yeah.
It's really, your knowledge is very impressive of all these related issues of Nordic and Baltic security and other related matters. So thank you very much for joining us here on Polar Geopolitics, and talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Thank you so much, and that would be a pleasure.